Hello, everybody. This is Flurries and Films. This week, we're talking about Moulin Rouge.
Hit the music.
I'm Michael Flaherty.
I'm Colleen Flaherty, and this is Flaherty's on Films, a little podcast where we talk about films. Michael, what are we talking about this week? And what is it about?
We're talking about the film Moulin Rouge. Do you want to introduce our guest?
Well, I thought you could tell people what the movie was about first.
Yeah, I mean, the movie...
Per your instruction.
I guess, according to you, the movie outranks the guest, so I'll do that first. We're talking about the film Moulin Rouge from 2001. A poet, here's the description, a poet falls for a beautiful courtesan, which is whore, whom a jealous Duke covets.
But it's a pretty French. You know, French is so pretty because Moulin Rouge means red mill.
Really?
Like, French is just lovely. It just makes mundane words sound nice. And now for our special guest, Kayla!
Kayla's here.
Kayla DeFries.
Hello. Courtesans are not just whores.
What are they? They're whores in Paris.
They're like fancy whores. They make men fall in love with them, not just have sex.
Like sugar babies.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Kayla.
So, Kayla, you recommended this film. Tell the folks at home, but like briefly, you know, don't bore anybody, what your relationship is with the movie and why you recommended it.
Oh, sweet Jesus. Okay, so this is the best film of all time.
Whoa.
Period.
Spoilers.
Hands down. Whoa. Yeah, no. So the first time I watched this movie, I was probably like 13 or 14, and I didn't understand like any of the sexual references, which just made this film get better with age.
They're not subtle.
No, they're not, but I was real stupid. Oh, okay. So there's that. Anyway, it's great. It's like a perfect love story, and it's like a comic tragedy, and it has everything in it. It has great characters, it has amazing music, and I have been in love with it since I was a preteen, and I also sort of loosely based my wedding on it and made two of our other folks on the call here sing a song from it for my wedding that was based on Moulin Rouge. So I'm a little weirdly obsessed. How was it Moulin Rouge themed?
Besides the songs?
Well, all of the bridesmaids were wearing red satin dresses. I had Truth, Beauty, Freedom, and Love on canvases that were hanging up.
Our impeccably designed programs.
I was just going to mention the programs. The programs and the invitations had the Moulin Rouge on them. And they also said Truth, Beauty, Freedom, and Love.
And then Sam and I did this perfect can-can. You had to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, and like my colors just in general were like Moulin Rouge-y colors, and I don't know. It was loosely based. It wasn't like a, you know, walking into the set. I did want to have a windmill, but that was out of the budget. So
I feel like our family owns a windmill that you have
or a giant elephant.
Mini golf courses. So we should have just he
burned it, remember?
Oh shoot.
Sad.
Anyway, this is getting into the weeds. So it's good. Colleen, have you seen this film before?
I have seen this film. I watched it a lot as a young person.
Mm-hmm.
And because Ewan McGregor made me feel some girl feelings. Mm-hmm. And about 15 years later, Ewan McGregor still makes me feel some girl feelings, I think.
I heard he's kind of a slime ball, right?
Well, don't tell me that.
No, I mean, he's not like killing people.
But he's got
just
those,
an innocent poet, man.
He's got those dreamy eyes and that little chin dimple.
And I think he uses those to get younger women. So I've seen this film too, because you and I, fun fact, kind of inside baseball, we lived in the same house growing up. So I saw it because I was around you and you watched it. I remember you watched it all the time.
Watched it so much that I like haven't watched it all in 10 years. But I also remember that when I watched it as a young person, I would skip a lot of scenes, including the beginning and ending and a few songs. So it has been a long time since I've sat down and watched it from beginning to end.
Do you have a Well, should we all have a one sentence, like what do we think of it on our latest video?
I'm going to wait. I'm going to put a pin in mine because it's going to be like a whole thing and everyone's going to be bored by how many thoughts I have.
Okay, I thought it was good. So let's go to our first segment. Bam.
Time for Sam, the part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us some nifty facts. Sam, take it away.
So just some little history on the actual Moulin Rouge. Moulin Rouge was created in 1889 by Charles Zidler and Joseph Auler. And it was basically this big cabaret in Paris that was most noted, the building-wise, by the red windmill that they had on its roof.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. What does Moulin Rouge mean?
I just Thank said you. It.
No, no. Let me explain.
Thank you.
It means red windmill.
Okay, I'm learning.
So basically, Moulin Rouge was best known because it's considered the birthplace of the can-can dance. And so it was kind of the big place to go and party in that part of France.
Can I interrupt one more time? At what point after you invent the can-can are you like, yes, this is really something. This is awesome. We gotta show everybody. This can-can
just
rules.
Totally random off the wall thing that the can-can dancers in this film cannot be historically accurate because the can-can dress dancers in the original Moulin Rouge had ripped knickers. Mm. So when they can-canned, you saw stuff.
Mm. Oh.
So to get the PG-13 rating,
the one anachronism of this movie.
The only inaccuracy, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Everything else is mm-hmm. spot on.
Historically on the dot.
Yes. So this film was written by Baz. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. So
Lerman.
Thank you guys very much. And I have an exceptionally long quote from him, but I really liked it because, like Colleen and Kayla, I have also seen this movie a million times. And I thought that this quote about what he was thinking when he came up with it really explained a lot of the film to me. So apologies if this is a bit of a long quote, but here we go. When I was in India researching Midsummer Night's Dream, we went to this huge ice cream pitcher palace to see a Bollywood movie. Here we were, about 2,000 Indians watching a film in Hindi, and there was the lowest possible comedy, and then incredible drama and tragedy, and then breakout in songs. And it was 3.5 hours. We thought we had suddenly learned Hindi. Because we understood everything. We thought it was incredible how involved the audience were, how uncool they were, how their coolness had been ripped aside, and how they were united in the singular sharing of the story. The thrill of thinking, could we ever do that in the West? Could we ever get past that cerebral cool and perceived cool? It required this idea of comic tragedy. Could you make these switches? Fine in Shakespeare, low comedy, and then you die in 5 minutes. In Moulin Rouge, we went further. Our recognizable story through Orpheum in shape is derived from Camille, La Boheme. Whether you know those texts or not, you recognize those patterns and character types. Sorry, long quote.
Here's a little thing. I've read a few interviews with him, and Baz has admitted more than once that he sounds like a pretentious douche in interviews, and his wife has this little thing where she'll like boop him when he's being too pretentious or when he's name dropping.
Oh, wow.
That is fantastic.
I mean, that's very cute.
She's got a little douche boop.
I love that.
Yeah, she does. She'll just be like, boop. Like, during an interview once, he was like, so Jay-Z came in. I was like, oh, Jay-Z? Oh, and did David Bowie come along? Boop.
Oh, that's very
cute.
Yeah, that's amazing. So it was just kind of this idea of kind of creating, I don't know, this environment of a little bit over the top with like the serious acting. I don't know. It's got
really, really Bollywood energy.
It definitely does.
And so, I believe the song within the movie is actually a Bollywood song. The Chumma Chumma.
Yeah. Yes, that is. Yeah. So anyways, this basically the plot of the film is based off of three operas. So the first one is La Boheme, which more modern telling is Rent, kind of these struggling artists. and also falling in love with a dying girl. The courtesan part comes from the play La Traviata. I am really just throwing all these out. Sorry, I'm probably pronouncing them wrong. And then kind of the idea of this really talented musician trying to save a world from the green bad underworld is from Orpheus, the tale. It was also made into an opera, but it's from the Greek tale of Orpheus. Cool. So that's kind of where he had his inspiration to come up with Moulin Rouge. So now that he had his story, he had to do some casting. I'm going to throw out some names of people who could have been our Christian. Heath Ledger was deemed too young, but was considered. Also Hugh Jackman, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Leonardo DiCaprio.
I've never heard Jake or Leo sing, but Hugh can sing.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I have a quote from Leonardo DiCaprio, actually, because he had just done Romeo plus Juliet with Baz, and he auditioned, and quote, "I have a pretty atrocious voice, but we had a friendly thing where it was me and him and a piano player, and we tried to sing a song together. It didn't go well. I think it was Lean on Me, and when I hit the high note, he just turned to me and said, 'Yes, D. I don't know if this conversation should continue.'"
Aww.
They're still friends. It's fine.
Yeah.
Other people who
he is fine.
He's fine. He's okay. He's good. So other people who were considered for Satine were Catherine Zeta-Jones and Renee Zellweger and Kate Winslet. Sure. Just to throw some names out there. One of the most intriguing characters, I think, in this film is played by John Leguizamo, who we know a lot of from this podcast.
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the
pod. Friend of the pod. He actually plays a character who has like 10 million names, but I'm going to call him Henry because that's his first name.
Henri Toulouse-Lautrec Mongval.
Mongval.
I did not realize this until I was researching it, that he's based on a real person.
Yeah. No,
I did not know that.
Toulouse-Lautrec. He painted the famous can-can lady.
Yeah,
well, now I know.
We all
he
knew
was a
that.
Regular.
All of us knew that.
Well, all of us were equally in the know, except for Sam.
Sam, you fool.
So I researched him, and it was actually quite interesting, because I always thought it was kind of silly that they had Leguizamo, like, he's a normal human being from the waist up, and then he's, like, on his knees. That's how they filmed him.
Clearly. Him on his, like, it does not look like a special effect.
Right. They had him on his knees, but then he was wearing, like, colored socks so that they could take out his legs, right? I did not realize, besides the fact that this was a real person, that he actually looked like that in real life, where he had a normal size abdomen, but really short legs, because due to family inbreeding, he had super messed up disorders, and both of his legs were broken and didn't heal correctly. So he had a normal torso and then just really small legs. And he was this very famous painter and pretty much artist all around, but he was also a really big alcoholic, and he had to walk with a cane, and he actually hollowed out his cane and filled it with alcohol so he would never be without alcohol.
I love that.
Which
that would be cool if it wasn't so tragic.
Yes.
I mean, well, yeah.
Yeah, he did die from his alcoholism and syphilis he got from sleeping with all the prostitutes. Down. But not from falling down. So anyways, so Leguizamo, he had to obviously be put into a lot of uncomfortable positions for this film. So he was often on his knees, or he would have to like do a whole scene while squatting to just like in cases where he needed to be more mobile. So anyways, he would say later on, 5 years later, that his knees had recovered, quote, "It's my lower back that's still compressed. Fortunately, the filmmakers got me a really great physical therapist who saved my spine." Jesus. But that was 4 years later, so
dang.
Kind of just messed him up.
Wow. Yeah, I remember he had to go through like crazy physical therapy right after.
Yeah.
It was real bad.
For Mario, he had to escape the Mushroom Kingdom. He spent through a lot.
Yeah, he totally drunk drove during that movie.
And in The Happening, he
Oh, yeah, did he actually get in a bad accident in Mario?
He accidentally hit the like gas too fast and the door slammed shut on Bob Hoskins' hand.
Oh, it was Bob. Yeah.
Yeah.
But those are the two John Leguizamo movies we've done.
And The Happening.
The Mario Brothers and The Happening.
And yes. This, yeah.
Oh, and now this, yeah. This might be the best John Leguizamo film we've done. Maybe.
Let's hold off.
Whoa.
I would argue that he was perfect in every film.
Yeah, he was.
Yes.
He is even perfect. If the film wasn't great, he was perfect in it. So now you have your cast. Filming took place in Australia. And the day before filming was starting, Baz's father died.
Aww.
He told his son as he was getting ill and slowly passing away to focus on the film. And that would become Baz's mantra going forward as this kind of crazy film happened. So the film is dedicated to his dad. Leonard.
Aww. His dad's name is Leonard Lerman.
That's what you're taking away from it.
That's such a silly name.
Leo. Leo Lerman. Maybe that's why he can't call Leonardo DiCaprio Leo.
Yeah, it's too many L's.
That's why it's D.
Call his dad Leo.
Say
Kayla.
Maybe he did.
Say Leo. What is his name? Leonard? Say Leonard, yeah. Lerman five times fast. You can't do it.
Leonard Lerman.
Nope. Lenny Lerman. Lenny Lerman.
All these people at the funeral. Okay. Just making themselves look silly.
Great content, guys.
So production began in November of 1999, like I said, in Sydney. They had a budget of $52.5 million. Right away, Nicole Kidman, while rehearsing for one of her dances, fell down a flight of stairs in her heels and broke her ribs. A little bit later, she was being put into her corset and rebroke said ribs. Jeez. So for a portion of the film, she had to be actually in a wheelchair. So like the scene that they always bring up is the part where she says, "A real actress." She was in a wheelchair at that point.
Jesus.
I
know one of those shots where she's in the ring. She has broken ribs. That was a fact of the DVD commentary. Oh.
She also injured her knee too from the dance. Like it was just a very intensive dance thing. But anyways, apparently the injuries were so bad, she actually had to pull out of her next film, which was Panic Room, a David Fincher film. The necklace that she wears in this film was made for the film. It had 1,308 diamonds. And it was worth about $3 million. At the time, it was the most expensive piece of jewelry created for a film.
Why can't you just get fake jewelry? It looks...
Yeah, that's so crazy to me.
Nobody's going to be like, that doesn't look real in a Baz Luhrmann film. Like, Jesus.
There's literally raining glitter at one point in this film, and they had to get a real diamond necklace. Like,
guys, we got to do this right.
Think about Leonard.
Yeah. Crikey! That's what he says. I'm sorry.
So this film did take place in, it took place in France, but it was filmed in Sydney, and as I'm sure you guys are all shocked, it went over schedule.
Oh, sure.
So the next film that was supposed to be shooting in that studio was Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones. And as I'm sure you guys believe, George Lucas was very understanding about the fact that they weren't done with the film. So he kicked him out and they had to film quickly in Madrid because they couldn't film.
My favorite thing while I was watching it with Michael, and he's like, I just keep hearing Obi-Wan.
I don't like those movies, but that's for some reason I just keep hearing that.
He's a Jedi.
You're the chosen one! Yeah, that kind
of So Moulin Rouge was released on June 1st, 2001, and it would gross $121 million internationally.
And
it was ranked
And what did Attack of the Clones get?
I didn't look it up. You know why? Because I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I think Attack of the Clones, didn't that come out in 2002? But anyway, not important. Sorry.
It would rank number 42 in the top movies of that year. And it has been considered one of the greatest movies of that year.
Sure.
It would be nominated for a couple Academy Awards.
Wait, I have a fun fact before. Wait, because one of the movies that came out that year was a Harry Potter film, and Baz Luhrmann was asked to direct a Harry Potter film, and he turned it down. Can you imagine?
Dang.
That would have been Interesting.
Think you made the right
what
choice.
What a romp.
So anyway, go ahead, Sam. Sorry.
So your question of the week, how many nominations did this film get for the Academy Award?
4.
10.
1.
We've all guessed.
I thought it was snubbed.
8.
Ah.
Oh, all right.
It would win 2. It was nominated for Best Picture, Best Actress, Best Film Editing, Best Cinematography, Best Costume Design, Best Art Direction, Best Makeup, and Best Sound. Out of those, it would win Best Costume Design and Best Art Direction.
I have a fact.
You might notice that there's one very obvious missing one. Colleen, what is it?
What is it?
Is that your fact? Oh, I thought that was your fact.
Best Director.
It's missing Best Director.
That's where it was snubbed.
Yep. Baz was snubbed by not getting a nomination for Best Director. And what I love about it is that Whoopi Goldberg was the host of the Oscars that year. And she started off by saying, I guess Moulin Rouge just directed itself.
That's very
funny. Like words.
So here's the fact. So Art Direction and Costume both won by Baz Luhrmann's wife. She is the creative eye behind all his projects, and she has won 4 Oscars for her efforts, meaning, and she is the Australian person with the most Oscars.
Damn.
So suck it, Mel Gibson.
Damn. Nice.
She has more than her husband, more than every high profile Australian actor. Suck it, Russell Crowe.
That is awesome. That. I will say that this is also the first movie musical in 10 years to be nominated for an Academy Award in the Best Picture field. So do you guys have any guesses on what was the last Disney, or shoot, it was Disney.
Aladdin!
It was not Aladdin.
Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast. Yeah. Beauty and the Beast was the last musical before this one.
Okay.
I would have guessed it even without the Disney hint.
That is all I have for you guys today, but I
Sam,
did
that was
have
a lot of facts.
Don't I did say, have back by popular demand, would you guys like a animal?
Absolutely. Been waiting.
Hell yeah.
Okay. On average, how many people are killed by sharks each year worldwide?
10. It's like a small number.
It's a very small. I'm going to say 2.
40.
Or probably. It's probably like 500.
It's 4.
What? Yes!
Here's my next follow up. How many people are killed by hippos?
Like, more. Like hippos are 40. Terrifying. They're really
1,000.
100.
40.
3,000.
Wow.
A year?
A year.
Hippos are bad, man.
How is that real?
That was a good fact.
Why don't we talk about this?
That was Bam.
Time for Sam. Here's some more Baz Luhrmann facts.
Oh, please.
So Michael and I were very... production company name is Baz Mark. So Michael and I thought that was really funny. Like, it's maybe Baz and his buddy Mark, his like uncreative but super supportive friend named Mark, who like Baz is like, I want glitter everywhere. I don't know. And Mark's like, get him the glitter. That's why you're
like the strong man.
Oh, I thought Mark was looking at the clipboards like, is this in the budget, Baz?
Oh, that's okay, Baz.
Oh, I'm not sure.
I'm actually envisioning Baz Luhrmann and Mark Wahlberg working together.
But like him being just a nervous Nelly.
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg with glasses on, horn-rimmed glasses.
Man, you gotta watch The Happening. Anyway, so Michael, I'm so sorry to tell you that his name is Baz Mark. That's his first name.
What?
That's his full name.
His given name is Mark Luhrmann. His dad called him Baz when he was in high school because of a TV character in Australia, and he wanted to own it, so he legally changed his name to Baz Mark.
All right. I think his wife might be onto something.
I love that.
The pretentious nonsense?
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. Let's talk about the film Moulin Rouge.
All right.
Let's see what the critics have to say about it. That's what I meant to say. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, I will start us off.
Okay. Sounds good.
With David Ensign from Newsweek. Moulin Rouge seems to defy aesthetic gravity. By reveling in all things artificial, it arrives giddily at the genuine.
Wow. It's a lot of G words.
It's true.
Kayla, do you want to read this next review?
Oh, by Paul Loveking, an Amazon reviewer.
Do it.
It looks great. It sounds great. It does nothing for me at all. It goes nowhere, and it couldn't interest me in the characters at all. Mm. Cardboard cutouts have more personality. This Ouch. Is hard to read. The storyline simply wasn't there. My ruler has more twists. Had I seen it in the theater, I would have walked out and gone and seen whatever was playing in the next room. If you love musicals and are amused by the constant recycling of old pop music lyrics in a new context, by all means, you'll love this one.
I do love that. Paul Love King is onto something.
Ooh.
All right. I'll read this next one by Jeanette Katlaus. Gorgeously decadent, massively contrived, and gloriously superficial. Was that all a right. positive
I wanted to
review?
Read that one.
Yeah.
I think so. I think that actually hits the nail on the head.
This is by Serge of an Amazon reviewer. Sheep. That's what you are if you pretend to enjoy this quote-unquote film. A sheep. The media pretends that they are so sophisticated and arty and that anybody with any sense would just love this movie. Wrong. Oh, the only reason anyone would pretend to like it is because musicals are supposed to be arty and the media tells you it's good.
Oh man, Serg, just kind of
I am so triggered.
Well, you can read the next one, Kayla.
Give me a trigger warning, Serg.
Okay, by Peter Bradshaw from The Guardian.
Bring me Peter
Bradshaw.
From the first frame of this film and all the way through until it slows right down for a ponderous Andrew Lloyd Webber-style tragic ending, Moulin Rouge screams along at a breakneck pace. With his cartoon gestures and his trademark crash zooms into people's faces, Lerman cannot or will not calm down. We are never allowed to draw breath. It is as if Baz has simply gone to Starbucks, purchased a 10-gallon drum of pure espresso for each member of the cast and crew, imbibed about 20 gallons himself, and then shouted, action.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, there's a lot of energy. All right, this last one's by Mrs. B, who writes for Amazon. Here's a few adjectives to give you an idea of just how bad this film is. Atrocious. Highly overrated. Badly acted. The worst film I've ever seen. Proof that Hollywood hype can dupe most people into thinking something is good with a few shiny costumes and a couple of big names. Unoriginal Christmas plays by six-year-olds are better than this. What the... Christmas plays by six-year-olds are better than this. I would give it minus 3 stars if I could. Ouch. So horrible. You may want to give up TV and movies for a few months. Monstrously unintelligent, disjointed, and a smash-up derby is able to touch you more emotionally than this utter garbage.
Whoa!
She's garbage. Wow.
Mrs. B.
I think I know
what B stands for.
Yeah.
Now we are going to get into what the film Moulin Rouge is about. We're going to do our little intern summary.
Because we have an intern. And they wrote this. That's the premise of this bit.
Got it. Okay. I'm here for it.
Sometimes even I need reminding. I'll read the first paragraph. I'm going to read the first paragraph word for word.
Word for word?
Apparently you don't have to do that, but I will.
Take liberties with the script.
All right. In 1900 Paris, a man named Christian, played by Ewan McGregor, who you probably know as Obi-Wan Kenobi from the prequel films and the Star Wars series of films, begins writing a story, Nature Boy. Is that real?
That's the name of the song. There was a boy. That's
a Nature Boy.
Very strange, enchanted boy.
I think that's a David Bowie song.
They say he wanted... Sorry.
Go to the streams, Nature Boy. One year earlier, he moves to the Montmartre district to join the Bohemian movement.
Not to pull a Baz, but
all right. So we have Christian. He's a cutie. He's such a cutie,
he's so
excited to be in Paris and be a writer because he's so believes in the Bohemian. By the way, there's this thing where they're like, the Bohemian ideals of truth, beauty, freedom, and love. And it's like, that's nothing. That doesn't mean anything. This movie does not seriously have a conversation.
Hold on.
Are
you an artist?
Do you not believe in those things?
Everybody does. What a stupid question.
Not everybody does.
I feel like if you understood art, you would really get
I would understand truth.
Yeah, yeah, and it's sad that you don't. Can I just say
it's sad that I don't know what beauty is, I guess.
If only.
Then maybe you could understand love.
I mean, I guess if we're talking about Rent and La Boheme, like, I feel like it, this movie as seriously goes with the theme of like bohemian ideals just as much as Rent, but at least this movie doesn't pretend that it's being serious. No. Like Rent,
no,
like,
that's true.
Rent is like being a pretentious asshole about it's nothing ideology, but at least this movie doesn't really care. So I'm okay with it. But
this anyway, movie knows what it is.
Anyway, here's the thing about this movie that I kind of forgot. This movie is funny. All right. So the beginning is so maudlin and he's so sad. And in fact, that's a part I used to skip. And he's like, the woman I love is dead. And then we get into it and he's like, chipper. And he's like, and what I really believe in is love. Only one problem. I've never been in love. And there's a lot of fun Looney Tunes sound effects.
I love the sound effects.
And then an unconscious Argentinian falls through his roof and he meets this troupe of performers headed by friend of the pod, John Leguizamo, who's playing Henri Toulouse-Lautrec. And they're putting on a play. And my, I love it because then they're doing Spectacular, Spectacular. And there's this writer who sucks. But Christian comes up and they can't figure out the lyrics to this one song. But guess what it is, guys? It's that song from The Sound of Music. You know, the Hills Are Alive.
Yeah.
The Hills Are Alive.
We had the comment. Because we're so funny. We had the comment that the movie has a lot of kind of Muppet energy. Like, it felt like a Muppet film. Just because it's all so sporadic and fun.
And that wild. Sounds like an insult, but it is not. No. That is the highest compliment.
Yeah.
I want to reiterate what Sam said about that quote, that Baz Luhrmann quote, where he's like, what if we could make a movie that is just not cool at all? And that is very true. And I really feel that. It is so... I love that. That this movie is so lame, but also, like, going for but, it.
Yeah, it really is. So, okay, so anyway, the plot, which isn't that important, but they're going to put on a show called Spectacular Spectacular, and they need to sell it to Harold Ziedler, who owns the Moulin Rouge. And in a deleted scene, they explain why he's broke, but I guess this movie doesn't really care about plot.
No.
So don't worry about it.
That's not important.
So they're going to bring Christian on as the new writer, because he's so sexy and good at writing lyrics.
All right, yes. Someone else read now. Popcorn Kayla.
Popcorn Kayla.
All right. So they arrive at the Moulin Rouge as Ziedler and his Diamond Dog Dancers perform Ziedler's rap medley / can-can dance, which is basically just how I wanted my life to be when I was when I was like 14.
I love the part where they're singing and it's like clearly just Christina Aguilera.
Oh, yeah.
The it most recognizable voice of that year. And it's some random actress.
So great. So Toulouse arranges for Christian to present his work to Satine, Nicole Kidman, the star courtesan, not whore, unaware that Ziedler has promised Satine to the Duke of Monroth, his potential investor. And there is... wait, how much can I go into this? Oh, yeah. So there is like some shenanigans that... happen, which makes Satine think that Christian, the writer, is actually the Duke. So she
gets a very them. Like Three's Company misunderstandings are happening.
Yes. Yes.
Question.
Yes. Question.
What are all the songs in the medley? So there's Smells Like Teen Spirit. What else is there?
There's Voulez-vous coucher avec moi?
Which is a real song?
Because yeah. Can.
It was a song from like the 70s.
Oh,
yeah.
But then they re-released it with the Christina Aguilera version, which is the only one I really know.
Nice. And Pink and Maya and Lil' Kim.
I forget. They do actually say all the names in the song. So it's pretty embarrassing. I don't remember that. By the way, Diamond Dog is a Bowie thing. I didn't know that. David explained that to me. Also, I gotta say, so I feel bad for Baz that he feels slighted, but the costumes in this are A+. They're amazing. I had to pick out one element of this movie to win an Oscar, it is the costumes. They're so
there cool. is a reason you guys wore red satin dresses at my wedding.
Right.
It's because of the costumes.
And the sets are really cool too.
They're really cool. I mean, yeah.
I could see if I was a 14-year-old
aesthetic.
If I was a 14-year-old girl, I know I say this every episode, but if I was a 14-year-old girl, I get why you'd be obsessed with this movie because just like well, the sets are so cool, the costumes are so cool, but I think also it's the filmmaking, where there's like, it feels like there's 10 movies worth of content in this one movie. Mm-hmm. Where like, even I just saw it Saturday, and I feel like I want to see it again, because like I feel like all the scenes went by so fast. I
was like, it's a rewatchable movie.
Yeah, let me see that scene, though.
For sure. Yeah.
Anyway, that was the point.
Michael, you want to tell us what happens next?
Sure.
Popcorn.
Satine mistakes Christian for the Duke, which is quite a mix-up. And they dance before retiring to her chamber. These are the names of songs.
Yes.
But she learns he is merely a writer.
All right. I have some
yours. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Well, first of all, my trash opinion is that I like Ewan McGregor's version of your song better than Elton John's.
Oh, sure.
That's probably more people would come for me for that, but I don't really like Elton John's
coming for
version
you
that much. And I would like it Christian.
Sam disagrees. Oh, okay.
She is.
I think Christian's version makes more sense in the context
Elton John's
than Elton John's version, because the lyrics are the same and they make no sense as a real song.
All of Elton John covers are better than Elton John. Like, Lion King songs are better than when you hear Elton John do them.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Oh, so I guess Sam hates the Lion King. I guess that's what's up.
I guess. Yeah, that's what I'm picking up.
So here's what I want to talk about in that scene. Here's a funny choice of this movie. Is Nicole Kidman is gorgeous. Like, she is so pretty. Like, sometimes she's hard to look at. Mm-hmm. Every time she's being sexy and seductive, she is being a cartoon. Like, she is not in any way ever. Michael, you're the straight guy in this podcast. Am I wrong about that?
Yes, I am.
But I mean, no, am I wrong about Nicole's seduction techniques?
Yeah, do you want to do an imitation?
Oh, words!
Yes, but I want nutty words!
Nutty words!
But the weird part is that Christian's still in the mix-up, so he thinks he's just like giving a poetry reading that's just not going well. He must be thinking, like, I guess I just really am a bad poet, because she is just screaming. Like, I nearly messed this up.
But then there's that moment when he starts singing and then her whole face changes and you can tell, like, she's obviously faking an orgasm. And then she's not anymore. And, like,
in what world does she think that someone's like, oh, she is definitely having an orgasm because I am talking at her?
Maybe that works. Well, I mean, maybe she thinks that that's what the poet wants.
And this is period, you know, realistic, you know, it's that, right, of that time.
What I think is very funny, but almost kind of a bold choice, because, again, she's so beautiful, but all the hooker stuff isn't very seedy because it seems so silly.
Right.
Well, yeah, when you're in a room that's a green screen full of sparkles, how gritty can you be?
Well, so I actually have a weird compliment about that, though, because then I feel like the only time this movie is in any way sensual is when it's real with her and Christian, who, by the way, I should mention, they have very good chemistry. So even though there isn't any good character development, you kind of care about these characters, because the only way you see her be a real person and be
around
in any way sensual, is when they're together being in love or whatever you want to call it. So I think it's kind of a choice that works out for the viewer, because it's so silly. And then it's so like, aw.
And the can I just say, the aesthetic of your song is every
that cartoon moon does bring a Muppet, like,
the cartoon moon, and like they're dancing through the fog and it's raining glitter, and then suddenly his suit is glittery. Like, it's just,
Michael, be a 14-year-old girl right now. Are you swooning?
I'm swooning. A 31-year-old girl and I'm swooning.
I was swooning as well. I don't know what I'm saying.
I loved it.
So anyway, popcorn.
Good music. Yes. Good music all around.
You like the music.
I love the music. I think it's really good.
Popcorn, Kayla.
Oh, shoot. Okay. The Duke interrupts. So after they sang your song, and Satine says that she's falling in love with him, Christian, in love with a beautiful, or a young, handsome Duke. And Christian admits that he is not a Duke. In fact, he is a writer. And after that happens, the Duke interrupts them. The real Big
Christian does this great slapstick stuff, right? There's one point when he hides in a corner by just putting his face in the corner.
Oh, yeah. And like no one notices. It's
like
great.
A literal three-year-old would do.
But then he like puts a little napkin
he over hides behind her legs.
Peeks out from under.
It's really cute. Oh, I thought you were going to compliment how great that actor is who plays the Duke.
I hadn't.
He's
amazing
so good.
And awful, and I hate him. I love to hate him. Yeah. I think is where I'm going. So the Duke comes in, and then he leaves because Satine sends him away, promising that basically she'll bang him on opening night, which is important for later.
Mm-hmm.
And the Duke is never suspicious that she's not acting like a human person.
Right. No. I mean, maybe he's used to that. He's a Duke, you know?
Sure.
So anyway, after he leaves, Satine passes out, as she did earlier, into the arms of Christian. And the Duke comes in and sees them together. And at that very moment, Satine wakes up and is like, no. I was just so inspired by your penis that I wanted to rehearse Spectacular, our new musical. And at that moment, when Toulouse-Lautrec has been spying on him the whole time, so has Ziedler, they come and interrupt, and they're like, oh, like we're here to help. And they pitch the show to the Duke with a song called The Pitch, or Spectacular, which is so campy and so fun.
So campy.
And they basically improvise the plot of the show that they're going to do, which is also the plot of the movie that we are watching.
Shout out to my favorite sound effect, which is when the guy Ziedler is singing. Yeah, that's exactly it. He goes, spectacular, and then he fast moves around the room, and it's just a guy going,
the words in the vernacular.
That is, I mean, if we're gonna pinpoint the most Looney Tunes scene, it's this one. As somebody who has to now make up stories for my three-year-old, I don't think I would be great under pressure in this situation.
I mean, I feel like he did exactly like what you would do. He just made his reality a little bit crazier.
I love the acting choices in it where they're like, oh, it's set in Switzerland. No, I don't like Switzerland. It's set in India! Like, he's being...
You can tell he's a writer because he thought of another country very fast.
Yeah.
By looking at a sitar.
Yeah.
It's just so, and the Duke is like, sure, this is natural. You plan this out. Okay.
Generally, I like it.
Oh, that is a country. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And the moment where he goes, this feeling inside.
It's a little bit funny. This feeling inside.
Ooh.
Is his accent real? Does anybody have that
accent?
No,
he's Australian.
Oh, I mean, but nobody in the world has that accent. It's
no,
so funny.
No, God, no.
I hope someone does.
So anyway, the pitch goes great.
Obviously.
And Duke is like, perfect. This is clearly something you've thought out for a long time, and I want to back the show.
Yes.
But on this weird condition where only he can court Satine, which is, I believe, is a thing you could do contractually in 1900. So she really wants to be a real actress, and she has the swan song. And I gotta say, I'm sorry, I think it kind of stops the film dead. I think Nicole Kidman
for like
is
2 minutes.
Sure. Yeah. But my time is valuable, Michael.
Sure. You got your
And I just think I don't want to be mean because like Nicole Kidman's a far better singer than I will ever be. And she's a good enough singer, but I don't think she's her own swan song good. Like those songs are usually kind of boring unless you're a spectacular singer.
I think she has kind of a thin voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty, but it's thin. It's not like the young, like the ingenue. Like, yeah. I've always thought that way about her voice.
Yeah. And then Christian returns and she's like, I don't really love you. I paid to, and he's like, I bet you do. And then they have a little love medley. He's like, oh, actually, we do love each other.
Okay, name all the songs in the medley.
The little love medley? That's all the time you're going to give that song?
Well, I was going to say, first of all, that it is a ludicrous scene because, like, at the beginning of it, she is being reasonable and he's being a dumb writer who just really wants to be in love. But the only reason you buy it is because their chemistry is so good. That you kind of believe she comes around because he's so cute. And it's a real hyper-realism situation. Love is a many splendid thing. There's that song.
One.
Loveless is up where you belong.
Two.
All you need is love.
Three. I will always love you by that.
Which mm-hmm. Was four. A rude song to give to Nicole. I'm sorry. She couldn't pull that off.
So four songs.
Yeah.
Well, don't make me do it because I'm just going to do it in my head and it's going to take forever.
All right. Well, there's more than four, which is
there's a lot. I believe it took Baz 2 straight years just to get all the rights to the song because he wouldn't compromise on it.
Yeah.
Dang.
So, fun fact, when I was in high school and also when I was in college, most of my friends were sopranos and I was an alto. So I sang Christian's part to the Elephant Love Medley with all of my friends. And it was so great. And I also...
Wasn't just me? That was all your friends? You whore?
Okay, so it was
Kayla, I thought that was just you and me thing.
It was you and my high school friend, Emily. Shout out. Hi, Emily. She's not listening. Anyway, yeah, so I used to... The best part is Love Lifts You Up Where You Belong. And I would always find the highest point in the room and go stand on it.
Oh, that's just cute.
Memories, man. Love it.
All right.
Anyway, sorry.
I'll read the next paragraph word for word. As the cabaret is converted to a theater, Christian and Satine meet under pretense of rehearsing.
Another very cute bit.
When the suspicious Duke threatens to stop financing the show, Ziedler arranges for Satine to dine with the Duke, but she falls ill from tuberculosis.
Michael, just because Kayla and I are going to be talking the most, can you describe this next scene, please?
Sure. So the Duke...
The worst one.
The Duke is in his castle, and Ziedler goes, oh, she's confessing. And he's like, what? I don't believe that. And then Ziedler goes, you make her feel like a virgin. And then they sing the song like a virgin. And it's very silly. When I was watching this with my sister, Colleen, who is my sister, it doesn't matter. She was like, I don't like this scene. However,
I
think there's some fun ballet dancing. But ballet dancing is like the whole scene. So how can you not like it?
I like it better now. Now that I've actually sat down to watch it for the first time in 10
minutes. The only problem with the scene is that there's no problems because it's really funny the whole time.
I think it's the weakest song in the show.
Weaker songs.
And they replaced it with a different song on Broadway, which I think is much better.
Oh, what song was that?
Can't remember.
Oh.
I'll find it.
It must have been so good.
I do like that at the very end when he's like going, but then they both belt out this note where it's clear that these two are like the best singers in the cast and they never get to do anything with that.
No, Ewan's the best.
All right. I mean, yeah, they don't have as dreamy
rocks.
It's
very fun. I mean, they just have such a weird energy.
It is so bizarre. And I do really like the ballet dancing. So Ziedler learns that Satine does not have long to live because she has tuberculosis. And we're like, duh, we saw her cough blood in the napkin. This isn't our first rodeo. Come on.
Right.
So yeah, they decide don't tell Satine that she's dying and don't tell Christian. Satine tells Christian that their relationship endangers the show. But he writes a song to affirm their love, come what may. Which had a really stupid version on the soundtrack, I remember. I just wonder why I loved Christian so much and still do to this day when he's kind of a whiny baby.
Maybe you're into
that.
But when I watch
him, he just loved her so much.
Now, most of the time when you say that, that's bad. When men behave badly and they say, but it's because he loved her so much, it's usually bad.
No, she made him do it.
He was behaving badly.
You're right. I just, and you know, of course he fell in love with her thinking he couldn't get jealous, but it's different when it's really happening.
Right.
I just find his performance so endearing.
It's because he's hot.
And
it's not some kind of mystery.
It is. And can we talk about...
Look, man, I have seen some hot actors who just cannot pull that off. You got to be hot, but also know how to be vulnerable, which is like extra layer of hot.
Totally.
That is true.
I hear you. What's our next paragraph?
So Come What May is kind of their song, their secret song for each other, that they can always sing and know that, like, come what may, they'll always be together, which is very cute. And then, okay, so after that, Nini, a jealous performer, a real bee, reveals to the Duke that this whole play is just a metaphor for Christian, Satine, and the Duke. It's like the play is like real life.
In no way does the movie set her up to have a motivation. Like, we're not actually aware she is jealous. She is just shit stirring for no reason, as far as we can tell as a viewer. Well,
and you can kind of, so you kind of know from a few lines earlier that she's just kind of a shit stir in general.
Right.
Like, when Satine passes out during Sparkling Diamonds, she's like, oh, I guess the Duke isn't going to get his money's worth tonight. So she's just like kind of a bee. Sure. Yeah. So anyway, she tells the Duke, who is like surprised, like, why? How? I don't understand. And the Duke, because of that, demands that the ending be changed to the court son choosing the Maharaja.
But wait,
makes no fucking sense. Whatever.
Because why would he choose over the Maharaja, who's offering a lifetime of security? That's a real love.
Awesome.
Why should the courtesan choose the Maharaja? And then Christian, cool as a cucumber.
Oh, this is such a
good... she doesn't love you. Him.
No, no, no. Like 5 minutes of silence.
Him. Because she doesn't love him.
Because she doesn't love him.
And he's thinking his head. Saved it.
Nailed it. So close. So close. That's why I'm Obi-Wan, baby.
So Satine, who is she's got this shit on lock. She knows what to do. She knows how to woo men. She knows how to twist them around her little baby fingers. She is going to save the day and offer to spend the night with the Duke so that they can keep the original ending and not fuck up this entire show.
Michael, what happens next?
At the Duke's quarters, Satine sees Christian on the streets below and realizes she cannot sleep with the Duke while the tango Roxanne plays, which is a great Dianecdote, which is an anecdote of our mom. This is a great scene because it's a great song, and there's like a big buildup to the song. It's so dramatic and it's so powerful. And then the song kicks in, and watching this with my mom, she did not realize that was the song until she sang Roxanne. And when he said the word, she burst out laughing. So funny.
Oh, no. Because it's like this like dramatic Spanish guitar intro, and he's telling this story about the Argentinian brothels, and then Roxanne, and Mom's like, what the fuck?
I actually think it's one of the best shows, or one of the best songs in the show.
It's a good song.
I love this scene.
My weird opinion about this scene is I think it's one of the best scenes that's a little hindered by Baz Luhrmann's camera work, because I would have loved for at least 30 seconds of uninterrupted wide shot of that amazing tango dancing.
But you
get too many cuts. You don't see enough of what is obviously amazing choreography.
Well, that what you want? Or is that what would make the movie better?
Colleen? It's what I want. It would probably make the movie worse.
You know what? So stop being so fucking selfish. Anyway.
Not about you.
Anyway. Oh, it gets dark. So the Duke attempts to rape her, but she is
not
saved.
Not a great guy.
Yeah,
saved by the one black character who has no lines.
His name is Le Chocolat.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yikes. Same name in the Broadway show.
Oh,
by the Broadway show, they've decided to like give him a line.
He's like a real character in the Broadway
show.
He's
eating a Hershey, and it's like, oh, it makes sense.
Satine is black in the Broadway show, so
that's fun. I I thought it was kind of a funny, it was a bit of a misdirect, because you see Christian go through a door, so you think he's the one to save her, but then it's not. And I don't really get what that means. I feel like it is intentional that they're surprising us with that, and I don't know why.
I don't know.
I feel like I want that explained to me by somebody.
I can't do it.
Anyway, Christian urges Satine to run away with him. She's like, great, I'm going to do it. She goes, what about the show? And it's funny because as a viewer, that was my first thought watching this, but like, but they did the show.
But right.
It's so good. Right. The rape and the killing. Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. You should probably go.
Yeah. True. Like, yeah. True.
Maybe not great.
So the Duke tells Zeidler he's going to have Christian killed if Satine is not his. So Zeidler goes to warn Satine. This scene's logic is crazy. So Zeidler goes to Satine. He's like, they're going to kill Christian if you don't go with the Duke. And she's like, it's fine. We're gonna fucking scare to you. And then he says, oh, by the way, you're dying. And she goes, well, guess I have to do the show and break Christian's heart. I'm like, what?
She is letting him go. She's like,
now, now in retrospect, this is I've watched this so many times. I've always been annoyed by this, but this was the first time I watched this. I'm like, maybe it's because for her, it's not worth risking his life if she's about to die.
Yes. That's why, yeah.
And that had never occurred to me before.
She would prefer to be sad and alone if she's not going to live a long life and make sure that he will be free and able to love someone else.
Right. So
it's true love, man. Because sure. It's perfect. It's a perfect film.
See, if you were an artist, you would know.
Yeah, I don't even know what beauty is.
Yeah, it's complex. I'm not going to explain it. Yeah.
So yeah, you must hurt him to save him. So Christian's thrown out from the Moulin Rouge. He's broken. Jean Leguizamo actually gives this very lovely little soliloquy about how you see me as this silly clown, but I am someone who knows love and really yearns for it, and that's why I know what you have is true. And then Christian's a total dick to him, which makes me think the character of Christian might be a hard person to be friends with.
Yeah.
But that's not a
problem. Artists in general are kind of hard to be friends with.
This is not... Yeah. Anyway, popcorn, Kayla.
Okay, so Satine rejects him. Show Must Go On plays. Great. Song in the show.
It's the Queen song. I didn't actually know that.
You didn't know that? Oh, so good.
What's that, Michael?
It's not a great song, is my opinion.
It is a great
song. I feel like it's not.
I love Queen, and I love
Queen sucks. I don't know. I'm just
fighting words.
He doesn't really believe that.
Just making drama. I
don't think you do. Anyway. Okay, so Satine has cut ties with Christian. She's all in on the Duke. She's sad about it, but she's dying anyway, so who cares? Night of the show, night of opening night, Christian sneaks into the Moulin Rouge because he's so angry and upset and heartbroken that he's going to go there and pay Satine her fee for being a courtesan because he is a dramatic ass bitch.
I was gonna say, what a messy bitch. Like, he's like, I'm gonna sell the only thing I own just so I can do a gesture of paying you because I'm mad.
I'm going to throw money at your feet.
Shut up.
He's a lot.
I'm saying he's a hard person to be friends with.
Yeah.
He's emotional.
I mean, yeah. Actually, I think that would be so fun to like watch from a distance.
Right.
But yeah, to be a part of that circle would be hard. Okay, so Hindi Sad Diamonds is the song that plays during that piece. He confronts her backstage and tries to give her the money, but they find themselves in the spotlight. The curtain opens.
Yeah, we never talked about that the Argentinian who plays the lead, he's a narcoleptic. Which they play for laughs a lot.
Yeah, it's so great.
With, the like a slide whistle. Argentinian. Boom, as he sleeps.
Yeah. What is he doing? Out
Zeidler is playing the evil Maharaja. So he is on stage, thank God, because he convinces the audience that Christian is really the sitar player in disguise.
It's so good because Christian comes out. And everyone's like, what? And he goes, mine eyes do not lie, for it is he, the same penniless sitar player.
And the whole audience is like, oh.
Colleen, that was a great retelling, but you did miss that he starts by going, ha 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 ha.
No, he dumps a disguise.
That acting is amazing. It's brilliant.
Jim Brown.
So yeah, he convinces the audience. And Christian gets to do his thing. He gets to feel like the bitch man that he is, throw money at Satine's feet, and walks off the stage.
Okay, it's so silly, but every time he does that, thank you for curing me of my ridiculous obsession.
Obsession with love.
It gets me. I think it's pretty good.
It's good.
I am a puddle by the end of this movie.
And you're like, where are the Looney Tunes sound effects? It should be playing.
It's a comic tragedy.
Here's the next paragraph. From the rafters, Toulouse declares, the greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved and return. Spurring Satine to sing the song Christian wrote to express their love. Christian returns to the stage, rejoining her in the song. The Duke orders his bodyguard to kill Christian, but is thwarted. While Ziedler stops the Duke's own attempt.
No, Michael, tell them what happens.
Well, you say it.
It's very silly.
So the gun just falls where the Duke is for some reason.
Like someone bowled it down the alley.
Right, right. And he takes the gun, he goes, it's got my way, my way. And then Ziedler punches him in the face.
Which is great.
And then the gun goes out the window and goes off the Eiffel Tower. Ding.
That's really funny.
I love how like they bring it. So it's tragic, but then they bring it back to the comedy piece.
Right. So, except I do feel like they should have just ended it a little quicker.
You saying no sound effect or what?
No, after the sound effect.
Well, what are they supposed to do? Hell, we're together and she dies, remember, at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, they do end it pretty quick.
Yeah, they do it quickly.
There's not much movie after that.
They couldn't have done it faster.
Kayla, why don't you end it up?
All right. So after the curtain closes, Satine, who has fallen back. Well, she never fell out of love with Christian, but now they're back together and they're so in love. But unfortunately, she succumbs to her tuberculosis right at that moment. And before she dies, Christian and Satine affirm their love for each other, and she tells him to write their story. A year later, the Moulin Rouge is closed down and was left in disrepair. Christian finishes writing the tale of his love for Satine, a love that will live forever.
Sure.
It's real sad.
I can't believe the song's Nature Boy. Go ahead.
I cry every single time I watch this movie.
I stop watching after the show.
Who never stops crying. Our brother John in our next segment, Bro Call, where we see what he has to say about the film. John, are you there?
Hey, brother.
Hey.
How you doing?
Hey, have you seen the film Moulin Rouge?
Yeah. So, when I went to college, it was that weird time where no one had VHS players anymore, but DVD players were too expensive, and the internet wasn't really a thing yet, but it was kind of a thing. So when I got to college, we all kind of watched the same like five movies that somebody had downloaded over and over and over again, and one of those movies was Moulin Rouge. So for whatever reason, my freshman year of college, I might have watched Moulin Rouge about 1,000 times.
You were like, Colleen.
That's great.
I don't really know why I did this, but as such, I now have I grew a lot of feelings about the movie.
I'm so happy for you,
and John. I have a
three specific feelings you have about this movie.
Well, I have very interesting, complicated feelings that I can't fully process about Ian McGregor.
Hot.
It's possible I'm attracted to him at a deep level. I'm not sure. Let's not explore it very far.
Yeah,
that's a good feeling. No one touches.
I went through an embarrassing number of watches before I realized that all the songs are not originals to Moulin Rouge.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You know what, John? I've watched it 80 million times, and I just learned that Come What May is the only unoriginal song.
It's the only original song.
I thought there were more horror originals, so I didn't know them. So
yeah, I only figured this out when, you know, you did that usual college thing where somebody comes up with the stupid drinking game of Roxanne. I'm like, oh, from Moulin Rouge. I'm like, what?
John, you a nerd. You must have been kicked out of the party when you said that.
Oh, parties, Mickey. I wasn't that cool. I'd be drinking like with two other people in my dorm room. Oh, come on.
They're like, you'll sleep somewhere else.
I didn't let my so
we respect the police in this dorm room.
Whoa, we're going there. Yeah, I mean, I love Ewan McGregor. I always wanted to sing like him because I do love all the songs in this movie.
John, but I do have a real, already, I'm shocked at how positive you're being.
I respect your opinion.
I was about to go negative, like right now.
I know. I'm shocked that you had any positive feelings.
I spoke too soon.
This movie has a huge tone problem, just incredible tone problem. Like, it can't decide. It can decide. It wants to be all things at all times. It wants to be a funny movie. It wants to be a passionate movie. It wants to be a sad movie.
That's
it wants
what
to be
it's
a
signed
dramatic
up for.
Movie.
Yeah, to be all that.
It's juggling all these goddamn balls at the same time.
And when you keep juggling, which, you're like, oh, lame.
It has to end with one of them. It has to choose one at the end, and it chooses the sad and depressing one. And then you're like, but I like the other balls better. It doesn't. It confuses me emotionally, and I don't like that journey.
Mm. You like to know what you're getting into, and you like a.
I mean, to be fair, when I was listening to the podcast just a bit ago. Clean says she skips parts of the movie. So even you clearly struggle with the total problem.
No. I said when I was a teenager, I skipped parts.
Oh, sure. So I'm glad there are at least two of us that have serious issues with the tone. And I also, I recognize that it's a thing that many, many stories do. But holy crap, do I hate plots where, like, if you guys just would be a little bit honest to talk about what's going on, most of this plot wouldn't have to happen.
Communication problems.
Yeah, maybe if you would just say, by the way, I'm dying, person I love, you know, maybe that's a fact you could share. Just
John, according to your logic, most movies and TV shows wouldn't happen.
For the record, if she told him that she was dying, he would never leave her, and then he would die.
Yeah, John.
If she told him that she was dying, he would never leave.
So,
why don't you buy that?
John, can I tell you a funny story that I'm probably not supposed to tell you? I watched it many, many years ago with Michelle, and I was like, Ewan is so hot. And she's like, I don't really go for that.
Me and Michelle are different tasting guys. We've established that. We're both very comfortable.
You know what she said? She said he's too weeny, too complainy. She didn't like it. She likes a man's man.
Oh, which is funny, because when I say I'm super attracted to Tom Hardy, she kind of like, yeah, not for me.
Who's more of a man than Tom Hardy?
I know, right?
It's not Tom Softy.
Anyway, I'm going to give this movie a B. I do enjoy it, but I do have some major foundational issues with it.
That's very right. Fair, John. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. We appreciate
all right.
That.
Michael, I'm going to start with you. Why is this the worst film ever made?
You know, I gotta say, it's got such a tonal problem. I mean, it wants to be all things. I feel like it's juggling a lot of balls, and it ends on such a sour one. Do you know what I mean?
Michael, wow, what an original and cool thing to say.
You know, I'll be honest, I just thought of that, and it's my idea. Clint, why is this the worst movie?
Well, first of all, I mean, it is definitely not a movie for everyone. The plot is silly and nonsensical.
Overdramatic. A soap opera-esque.
Yeah. I feel like Nicole Kidman. I have a weird. So my opinion about Nicole Kidman is I think she does such a good job in this role. I feel like actors in Hollywood need to get over this thing where they have to do everything themselves. Just dub already. Jesus.
Totally.
Like, you know, like her swan song should have just been sung by somebody who could really sing, and then she could still be in the show. That's how people used to do things. And I think I do hate some of the camera work. I hate shaky cam with a passion.
They did it for like 1 second.
They were literally for 1 second. I'm so mad about
this
it.
Movie. Actually, when I complained during the middle or the early bit of the movie, when they're doing the can, and they're doing like 1 second shots over and over again, it does hurt to watch physically for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is frenetic.
Which they're going for, but it hurt.
That's good. Even if that's what they intended to do, it's still a legitimate complaint. Yeah. So.
Kayla, why does this movie suck ass?
Oh, God. Okay, so I think there are some weak scenes. I do not think it has a tonal problem, but I'll get into that later. I think there are some weak scenes. Like, I think Like a Virgin is kind of a weak scene. And I don't think that Nicole Kidman has a super strong voice, although I do love how she played the role. Karen Olivo plays it on Broadway, and she, like, if you listen to the Broadway recording, her voice is insane.
Listening to that, and you're like, one day I'll fly away. I'm like, oh, this is a song I actually want to listen to.
Yeah, yeah. So, and Aaron Tveit plays Christian on Broadway, and he is also kind of an insane singer. So, like, I think that the vocals are not quite as strong. I mean, they're good. They're obviously very good. But they could be better. And that happened on Broadway. So I guess that's my critique.
All right, Kayla, why is this the best movie ever?
Why is it the best movie ever? Okay. This movie gives you everything you could want or need in a movie. It is a comic tragedy. That is the genre of this film. It is funny and sad, which is not like a crazy new thing that no one, like, that is the tone of this movie. So it has very, very funny parts, and then it has very, very sad and, like, heartfelt moments. And I love that. I love that I get to, like, laugh at pieces, and then I am a puddle and crying at the end of it, and I get to feel all those feelings. Also, the music. Oh, my God. This is the music of junior high school, and college in my head my whole life. Like, I love it. It's amazing. And the way that they intertwined the new songs to make them sort of original, so original that John didn't even know that they weren't original, is amazing. And the whole aesthetic of the film, and that might just be like a me thing, but it's such a pretty movie. Every shot is just very pretty, from the costumes to the set design to the special effects.
Michael and I couldn't figure this out. Was that part of the aesthetic of the early 2000s, or did that inform the aesthetic of the early 2000s? I couldn't really get a handle on it. I remember looking up what was cool in 2001. Everyone's like, 9/11 happened then. And I'm like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah. Well, that was not cool.
Right. So yeah. Anyway, that's not, but.
So yeah, that is why it is the best movie of all time.
Michael, why is it the best movie?
Let's see here. Good songs. Just, you know, I love something that's different. You know, when Baz is like, all right, studio execs, there's this one scene where we go while they kind of fast teleport around, and they're like, oh yeah, that makes us money. They're like, no, it's like, this movie definitely took a chance. It did something different and is very unique. And I actually think it's very, very good for that reason alone.
Yeah. Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the strongest point for me. And it's just such a unique energy. I can't think of a lot of movies that are like, oh, it's totally like Moulin Rouge. This is not like a cheap imitation of some other movie. And that's why I say I don't know other Bollywood movies.
Can I actually piggyback off of your point, where what I think is really remarkable about this film is it was very successful. And what studio executives took away from that was like, oh, people love jukebox musicals. Let's do more of that.
Well, they do.
And nothing else. Like, there's no other real, like, Moulin Rouge ripoff, right?
Totally.
Because it's a hard thing to execute. So let me just do my quick little... I did a little Baz Luhrmann deep dive. Because I was like... So I don't know if you folks are aware that there was a Free Britney doc recently.
Yes.
Where is this going?
It's great.
Yeah, I know, right?
Me and Trav got super into it.
Yeah, so I had to, like, kind of, you know, look at a bit of my internal misogyny when it came to things that I was really into as a teenager. And I know, like, I haven't watched Moulin Rouge in a long time. and I loved it, but I always kind of loved it but embarrassed about loving it. And I felt even the same way. I really loved Romeo plus Juliet, and I was kind of embarrassed about that. And I watched it with Michael. I'm like, you know, I think this is good. I think this is actually really good, not in an embarrassing way. So this weekend, I watched the entire what's called the Red Curtain Trilogy. So it's the Strictly Ballroom is Baz Luhrmann's first film, then William Shakespeare's Romeo plus Juliet, then Moulin Rouge. And it's Baz Luhrmann wanted to do the things he loved most about theater. So the first one's about dance. The second one is like about words. And the third one is about song. All right. And I think I really like Baz Luhrmann, you guys. I really think every single one of his films are so audacious and weird, but in a really palatable, fun way. Mm-hmm. And that is so hard to do. You know, you see, a lot of the greatest movies are like movies that are really raw and the human experience. And Baz is like, fuck that shit. Let's use the fucking medium of film and do spectacle. Right?
I love that.
I mean, Baz went in and he's like, g'day, Hollywood executives. I assume that's how he talks.
On like, a kangaroo, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He jumps in on a kangaroo. He's like, I want to do a Tale of the Bard, the, you know, Shakespeare. And they're like, sure, man. It's the 90s. People love that. He's like, yeah, it's going to be real sexy. It's going to be with
He gave Leonardo up on his DiCaprio. Australian accent at that point.
All right, it's going to be real. Right, Wallaby. It's gonna
he
be-
screams it too. Right.
Right. It's going to be sexy. It's going to be Leo. The Montague Capulets, but mafia. Yeah?
Yeah.
Right?
The glisten like, here. The gun will say sword on the gun.
You guys, that's not even the best part. The best part is there's a FedEx delivery, but it's called post haste.
That's pretty good.
But you guys, Romeo plus Juliet is good. It's actually good.
Yeah.
Like everyone in it is really good. The cinematography is amazing. There's a moment in it. There's a scene where Mercutio is just doing a drag queen lip sync. And it is so, you know, I do think he's probably a pretentious weirdo.
But he does
kind of capture the essence of like a Shakespeare and an opera, where it's a simple story that's kind of silly, but it's just heightened human emotion and spectacle. And he really does it. And who else really does that in an enjoyable film?
Not anyone I can think of in the modern day.
Yeah, he's so I think Stan, as the kids say. Now, I have not seen The Great Gatsby, and Australia was shit, but his first three films, he's only done five films, so, but I
think I've only seen Moulin Rouge.
Well, I highly suggest you watch Strictly Ballroom. I think you'd really like it. Yeah.
Okay, I bet I would.
Romeo plus Juliet, the
Oh no, I have blog. Seen. I've seen Romeo plus Juliet. I lie.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's very good. It's been a long time.
The gun says sword on it.
but some of them say sword and some of them say dagger. Just so it works with the dialogue.
Sure.
God damn it, that's
sure.
Funny.
It's funny.
What's the wrap up?
It's silly.
What's the wrap up?
Well, okay. So my point is all of this, right? That he is audacious and he's operatic and he's Shakespearean. But my favorite thing about all of that is he does not take himself seriously at all.
No.
And that's true with all the films I watch, where he's like, oh, this is silly nonsense that is spectacle. You know that. I know that. Let's all just have a good time, which is like A+ in my book.
He married a woman who boops him.
Yeah.
And that says something about him.
I just love that. So I guess what I love is that he's somebody who pretentiously loves the idea of art too much. But he's all just like, let's have a good time. And he understands that he is nonsense. I like that.
All right. What do we grade it?
I give it an A straight up.
All right.
A+.
A+. I will give it an A+. I think
wow,
it's
really?
Yeah. Because I don't think like movies are not as good as this movie trying to do this. In my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, definitely not.
So A+ for me. And that's gonna do it for us here at this podcast. Clayne, who are we sponsored by this week? I should know, but you're gonna prompt me. We both know.
Right. We know. We both know.
But why don't you say it first? We're both aware
who we're sponsored by.
And that is?
The iPhone.
The iPhone. So they just came out with their... Well, that was a while ago. But, I mean, it's a great product. Good smartphone. No bugs. No viruses. Is that a problem with Android?
Maybe. Not really. No, privacy is a problem with Android.
Privacy. God. You know, I'm just doing so many cool things, and I don't want anyone else to know. So, get iPhone. Yeah.
Who needs privacy?
Get iPhone so that I can text you all on my group chat on my laptop as well. I would like that. Thank you.
And what's our next film that we're doing?
Oh, let me just do the little dial.
Yes, do it.
It's Moonstruck.
Oh, Nicolas Cage vehicle.
Also another La Boheme reference. So.
All right. All right.
Everybody loves.
Look forward to that. Does the trailer have the songs in it?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Having a lot of Cher and Nicolas Cage being silly.
So look forward to some silliness and cut.
The moon brings the woman to the man, capisce?
The moon is a little like love.
Will you marry me?
I will marry you. I will be your wife.
You love him, Loretta?
No.
Good. When you love him, they drive you crazy.
Sometimes.
Why are you marrying Johnny? He's a fool.
It makes you act a little crazy.
Where are you taking me?
To the bed.
Oh, God. Okay, I don't care. Take me to the bed.
Isn't it romantic?
You got a love bite on your neck. Your life's going down the toilet.
You'll have your eyes open for you, my friend.
I have my eyes open.
I'll say no more.
You haven't said anything.
Ah, que bella luna.
You ruined my life.
That's impossible. You ruined my life.
Look, it's Cosmo's moon.
Why do men chase women?
Nerves? I don't want to talk about it.
That moon. That crazy moon.
Now you don't.
I love you.
What?
Snap out of it.
I'm confused.
They say there's nothing new under the sun.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
But under the moon, that's another story.
Do you love him, Loretta?
Ma, I love him awful.
Oh, God, that's too bad.
Cher. Nicolas Cage in a Norman Jewison film.
A la familia, eh?
Moonstruck.